Welcome to Paradise in the Pines, a podcast about the people, places, and stories that make this the home of American golf. Brought to you by the Pinehurst, Southern Pines, Aberdeen Area Convention and Visitors Bureau.
And hello again, everybody. Welcome to Paradise in the Pines. I'm Phil Wurz, President and CEO of the Pinehurst, Southern Pines, Aberdeen Area Convention and Visitors Bureau. Today, we're joined by Robert Heider, Senior Advisor for LKC Engineering and Landscape Architecture. And Robert, first of all, it's an honor. I got dressed up just for you today, wore the sports coat. I usually wear golf attire, which I do have down below. You can't see. Like my TV days, I would always wear shorts underneath the table. But yeah, it's an honor to have you here, Robert. I've heard your name many times. One of your associates at LKC, Adam Kiker, a fine gentleman who's a great leader in his own right here in the community, called me and said, you need to have Robert on the show. I think you'd be impressed. And to be perfectly candid with everybody out there, we had lunch last week before we taped this because I got your background and I knew you've done a lot of things in the community. But man, it's unbelievable. And it's for me, it was like, how are we going to like put this in a podcast? Because you've done so much over the course of your career. First of all, appreciate you being here and appreciate your contributions to the community. What have you been up to lately?
Well, thank you very much, Phil, for inviting me. You overestimate or kind of stretch that story a little long. What I'm up to lately is still continuing to be vested in the community and what goes on with planning and, of course, practicing landscape architecture to the degree that we do that at LKC. But a lot of what you've read there has to do with my passion for this community.
And how long you've been a part? Yeah, I know you've been at Pinehurst Resort since 1974, I believe. But how long you've been part of this community?
So I came here to join the faculty at Sand Hills Community College in 1973. Mm. I taught there for 13 years in the landscape department, which quite a notable part of the campus there. And in 1986, quote, hung a shingle and went into practice. Spent about 6 years in the Caribbean and hospitality side. And about that, all that timing, as you recall, when Club Corp of America bought the Pinehurst property, which was in pretty shabby shape, frankly. The Diamond Head era had run its course here. It was a real estate focused effort, and the lots had been sold enough for them to, and it was in receivership, frankly. Mm-hmm. Eight banks held the paper, and Mr. Dedman saw. Visionary he was, he saw opportunity here to bring the property back to life. I've also been quite vested in the other towns, not just Pinehurst, but Southern Pines, Aberdeen, as well as the county.
We'll go back a little bit into the history and how you developed your career at Pinehurst Resort, where you still serve today, your relationship with Mr. Dedman. But let's talk about present day. Let's talk about something that's going to happen here in the next few months, which is of global impact, which is the United States Open, the 124th, the fourth U.S. Open at Pinehurst Resort. What are you doing specifically to prepare? And we had Leighton Schwab on in a recent podcast. We've had Tom Pashley on, Janine Joska from the USGA. But what specifically from a landscape architecture perspective or your role with the resort are you contributing to the U.S. Open?
Well, of course, I'm a consultant. I don't actually work for the resort. I'm a private practitioner. I have to give you a little background before I can answer that question. Sure. So when the 99 Open came, it was a pivotal time for this whole community. And it's still today one of the most pivotal things that caused us to be what we are today. Our firm was then the Heider firm before we became LKC Engineering. And our responsibility, working with what was then called the Pinehurst Championship Management Team, mm-hmm. did everything outside the golf course preparations, where the hospitality tents were located, where the entrances. So we were the landscape architect that did all of that planning with the host property, Pinehurst, and in coordination with the USGA at that time. What's happened since, of course, USGA has gotten to where now they have their own in-house resources. Interestingly enough, many of those people were from the original Pinehurst Management Convention. I mean, Reg Jones, who's a wonderful friend and great colleague. So what we're doing now is not as directly involved with the Open as it once was. Our last Open that we did that same work for was in 2005. Mm-hmm. And then at that time, USGA basically brought in-house their vendors of choice for landscaping, for bleachers, for the tents, the whole thing. And so it's a different model today than it was then.
So do you work with Leighton Schwab, who basically what you just mentioned, that's what he's directly involved with. What role does he play with you and you with him?
Well, right now what Leighton and Reg are asking us to do, another privilege I've had is when Payne won the 99 Open, you know, within months of that, he terribly plane accident and passed. The resort hired me as a liaison between an artist named Zenos Fadakis, who's a friend of mine in Philadelphia, to do that likeness. So the likeness of Payne Stewart that many take their photograph with at the resort, among others, with Mr. Dedman and Mr. Tufts and so forth, all featured there. He will be crowded because of where the bleachers are going to be set for the 18th hole. And they've asked us to come and could we get him out of the ground, refurbish him, and then bring him back after the Open. So since our firm did the foundation for that work, the stability of the, we've been involved with that sort of what you can't see from the ground work to get him harvested, refurbished, and he'll be brought back to that position after the Open.
And I think when we met before this podcast, you talked about that refurbishment of the Payne Stewart statue that typically is done every, I think you said 10 or 15 years. Is this the first time that's ever been done there, right? Yeah. In 25 years?
Yeah,
or when was the statue, I know we won it 25 years ago, but when was the statue actually placed there?
I would tell you, my memory's not as sharp as I'd like it to be. Of course, 99, by 2001 at the latest, we had gone through all that process of getting the family's permission, their involvement in, you know, loaning us his clothes and so forth to do it properly, and then having it unveiled.
Now, and talk about how that all came about. I mean, you said it happened in 2001. Talk about the concept of the idea of doing this statue, because now when people go there, it is the most photographed thing in Pinehurst. I think when people come to this destination, factually, if not historically. But talk about how it came to be. How did the conversation start? Because when people go behind there, they see the other statues there, Donald Ross and Mr. Tufts and the others.
And Mr. Dedman as well.
And Mr. Dedman. Yep. And so how did that start the conversation of erecting a Payne Stewart statue in tribute to his win in 99?
Well, our relationship with the resort's always been a treasured one. It's just been a unique actual partnership. So Pat Corso and Beth Coker were the executives at the time. And when the plane accident occurred, within days, they were emotionally committed to celebrate him in some special way. Mm. And so, having never gone down those paths before as executives or me necessarily in that particular assignment, permission was sought from the family. Could we do this? It was granted. Then a relationship with me as one of the agents of dealing with the family, including the unveiling and so forth later, picking the artist and working through all that. You do maquettes. You probably know the sculptural process. It starts with
clay. I don't.
It starts with clay.
Dan probably does, producer.
Well, Zenos, who's world-renowned, if any of the listeners want to look him up, is Zenos Fadakis, located in Philadelphia. They start with the craft and art is his ability to mold clay into the likeness of yourself or me or anyone else, and then that is cast in bronze with pouring displacement molds with wax. And so you end up with these bronze pieces that are then seamlessly put together. Fast forward, though, at the unveiling, which was one of the most emotional days of my life, I might cry today, we draped the piece with a sheet-like fabric, and both Mrs. Stewart and both children were there beside him. I was assigned Aaron that day because I had two sons and there's a daughter, of course. And when each of them pulled a string, the drape fell off. And Aaron looked up to me, he was about this high.
Yeah.
And he said, "That's my daddy."
Oh.
And I cried boldly at that time. So my job is not just about the relationships and what we're capable of trying to help people with. It's filled with emotion.
Yeah, it's a great story. I know when we had Leighton on the show, I asked him, and he wouldn't spill the beans. I said, "I'm sure there are going to be some tributes." And so he quite wouldn't be too specific. But I think what's interesting is that the Stewart family, and Tracy specifically, they don't want this U.S. Open to be all about pain. I mean, there are going to be tributes. There's no doubt about it. The 25th anniversary of that and its significance to the Pinehurst area and to the Pinehurst Resort. But what is that family like? I think some people feel they have a loss with pain, but I still feel like they have some sort of connection with Tracy. And typically you'll see his son. I've seen him on TV, and he's probably the most forward-facing or public of any of them left. But just talk about their family and what you feel like they may encounter at this U.S. Open.
Well, you know, I wish I knew them better. My agency was collecting artifacts, photographs, and stuff that Zenos used in making him and so forth. And I don't really want to overemphasize my relationship with the family. That'd be a stretch. But I will say this, that I don't think we've ever done anything like this that a family was instrumental in part in every step along the way.
Awesome. I think we're really interested in seeing what they do with that statue and how that's going to be presented.
Yeah, we're curious
during
about that.
During the U.S. Open. Talk about your love affair with Pinehurst and your relationship with Mr. Dedman. It's interesting because I always tell Tom Pashley and Eric Huster, it's like, thank God for Mr. Dedman, because I've worked for hotels and resorts where the ownership is not so giving or doesn't want to invest in the property. Yeah. But, I mean, the continuum, what has happened in the transition of the resort in the last – I've been here 6 years, but I'd say the last 10 years with, you know, refurbishment number two, Gil Hance number four, doing the cradle, the brewery, the list goes on and on. But talk about your relationship with Mr. Dedman and how much he means to you and how much you feel like he means to this continuance of the history and the vibrancy of Pinehurst Resort.
So to me, there's two Mr. Dedmans in my life. Of course, Robert Dedman Sr. is, I think, who you're referring to first. And I won't say that I was an intimate, but I'm an acquaintance, and we knew each other well enough for me to involve myself on other acquisitions, including the homestead, including Defusky Island and so forth. So our relationship is still on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good.
Yeah, I can't hear it. Yeah, so our relationship has always been passing. It's not like we're in the same social groups or anything like that, but I'll never forget walking the hall in the homestead, which is not something maybe that's of interest to this area.
But that's fine. I think people are very familiar with the homestead.
So when we bought that, the next day, he and I were walking in what's called the Great Hall, and he said, partner. And when Mr. Dedman called you a partner, you had arrived.
You were good.
He said, what are you going to do here? And I said, well, Mr. Dedman, let's walk out the front. We walked out the front, the porte-cochere. I said, the real problem is you can't get out of this place. And he said, what do you mean? I said, let's walk down to the end of the hall. And it was just a brick wall. And I said, I'm going to knock that wall out, and we're going to have a beautiful big garden lawn out there, and we're going to just change this place. And I guess words I can use would be okay. And probably said, partner, don't screw up. So I said, yes, sir, I'll do my best. But I think the commitment the family's made to the Pinehurst property, even after selling, Club Corp of America, is telling. You know, Robert Dedman Jr. Also is a more than an acquaintance of mine. I've worked with him, and their commitment to this property and this community is as genuine as anything that anyone could ever experience.
Talk about what projects you're working on for him right now.
Well, we actually have been involved. Well, I wouldn't say we're principally the lead, but the USGA headquarters, our firm did all of the site work there. You probably know that the what we call the swim club at the resort was somewhat controversial in the Village of Pinehurst. We designed that entire thing. There's hardly anything outside the walls of the building, sidewalks, lightings, planting, signage, that over from 1989 till now, we still have an ongoing relationship, and so glad to have that with the resort and all their staff here.
If people are not familiar with, we can hear you, Robert.
Yeah, I just can't hear me.
Let's fix that, actually. I'll just go ahead and edit it.
Okay, he'll edit it later.
Okay. It's all good. So let's just see. I think your feet are by this plug. It's possible you just kicked
it. It's just going in and out. Now it's on.
Okay.
Yeah. I see what happened
there. Is it on? No, it's not on now.
Now you should hear it.
Yeah. Oh, good. Good.
Okay.
All
good? All
right.
Sorry.
Sweet. No, you're good.
So we'll just pick up.
Can just resume.
We can just pick up.
Just go right ahead. I didn't even stop recording. I'll just cut it out later.
Yep.
No bigs. It's on. Camera's on you, Phil.
So people are familiar with Golf House Pinehurst. The administrative offices are open. They open at the end of December, as well as the testing center, the other buildings, the World Golf Hall of Fame, and the welcome. No, I'm sorry. the administrative offices and the testing center. And then in the other building is the World Golf Hall of Fame and the Welcome Center. Yeah. I drove by there the other day and I saw some of the plantings there, wire grass and some other things. You're actually doing the pollinator garden, correct?
Our firm didn't do the planting play this time. We did all the civil engineering, the stormwater and the parking and siting, that kind of thing. We did not do the planting plans for this particular project.
You have been involved with the Village of Pinehurst. And it's interesting because I think a lot of people that come here see this really quaint village, New England style, but they're not familiar that Frederick Law Olmsted designed that, which, you know, how special is that, given what that gentleman, highly talented, skilled, obviously, and what he's done historically around the country, to have that here, examples of his work, and how much did that inspire you?
Well, it's actually unbelievably connected. You know, the father of my profession, landscape architecture, is Frederick Law Olmsted. Right. The fact that he and the Tufts family had a relationship in Boston, that Manning, his associate, actually came here and executed the plan, is like, how to be the 20th and 21st century connection to that has been my life, basically. Right. A lot of my practice has been in the Village of Pinehurst. So I've never thought of the resort and the village as being two separate things. To me, as a planner and as a landscape architect, they just melt together as one. And so my approach has always been what I call proprietary, and a notion that this is all one thing. Yeah. It's not two things. And so I've had the privilege of working both for the government, the local village government, and the resort, which is the primary, as well as, you should know, we work for First Health. So all three of those campuses, we've had our influence and contribute to those for the last, let's say, since the 90s, for sure, in all cases.
You've also worked closely with UDO's land use planning with all three towns, I believe, Pinehurst, Southern Pines, and Aberdeen.
That is correct.
It's interesting because from a tourism standpoint, I mean, I tell Reagan Parsons, who's the town manager here in Southern Pines, or the mayors of the towns, or, you know, Jeff Sanborn or Paul down in Aberdeen, you know, I don't envy your job because, you know, there are three different towns going, I don't want to say three different directions, but there's no cohesive. Do you believe there should be some more cohesiveness between the three towns, or, you know, is each one an individual animal unto itself?
Well, I think the latter is close because the public doesn't probably appreciate how much cooperation there is in lots of things that are not physical. Mm. Our fire and police protection programs, our traffic. I mean, there's lots of things they do have more of a united way to deal with and function. But the way I respect place is that each of these places, Southern Pines, Pinehurst, and Aberdeen, evolved in a different way. John Patrick was a kind of a strange fellow back in the late 1800s when Southern Pines was founded. And the actual master plan for the town is still a record of land use planning. Mm. Then you get Pinehurst, right? Well, Olmsted's firm did that. So now you have these two different approaches to the same objective, making a town, making a village. And Aberdeen was once called Blues Crossing. It was a mercantile. It was on the Yadkin Trail. It was a place you could, you know, do goods exchange and so forth. And so it grew up more as a railroad spur later and as a place of meager exchange of, you know, economies and so forth. So I see that if you grow from those places, you're always going to have a little different politic. You're going to have a different socio-demographic. You're going to have a different outcome.
Right.
Yeah.
And when we talked pre-show, you talked about Pinehurst and when Mr. Tufts came here. I mean, a lot of people see a lot of the pine forests here and things like that, but it was nothing like that when he arrived. And why would he, you know, coming from New England, from Boston, what made him find this place and put a stake in the ground in Pinehurst?
Well, I'll give you some legend, and there's always room for interpretations and legend. But Mr. Tufts was allegedly en route back to Boston from Florida on a train. So the crucible of growth in Moore County, as we know it today, started with the railroad track that connected, you know, if you will, Richmond to Miami. Mm-hmm. It was called the Seaboard Coastline Railroad. That was the beginning, because this was a virgin pine forest that no one today can even imagine. The size of the trees, the purity of the lumber, the yield that they would get. the Page family from Cary, Apex, North Carolina, came here and timbered vast hundreds and hundreds of acres of virgin pines because of the railroad. In fact, the spur that leaves Aberdeen and goes up Highway 5 is actually the Page line. Hmm. So where am I going with this is that the notion of Mr. Tufts getting, why did it stop here? Well, if you, in that era, the trains were steam. And every 12 to 15 miles, they had to stop to take on water. And this was the Manly Stop was what it was called then. Not Southern Pines, not Vineland, but Manly. And they took on water. The train had to be repaired. And he said, well, I think I'll hire a horse and just look around. Hmm. The next thing you know, he's gone west. And you can imagine this. The legends have that you could stand on what's now the Pinehurst Hotel porch and see to downtown Aberdeen, uninterrupted, no trees. So it was a foreboding looking place, stumps and just, you know, that. So the stake for the original Pinehurst was driven right beside the Givens Library is the stake of record. Hmm. And the way they surveyed it was, give me a circle from this stake. I want 5,000 acres. And I think the reason that he was intrigued by this area, he had apparently rained that day, and all the rain went away quickly. Hmm. There were no puddles, yeah. That kind of thing. And the exertion of sap coming out of thousands of pine tree stumps made you think you were using pine sol. So he's going back to a place called Boston where soot from using coal and firing furnaces and the industrial complex of the Northeast was not anything fresh smelling or looking. And he thought this would be a great place for wintering away from Boston.
Do you know Bill Fields?
I don't.
Bill Fields is actually a producer with NBC Sports. He's from Southern Pines. Just talking about the pine forest and how they were just, you know, mowed down for turpentine and what Mr. Tufts found when he got here. Bill, being from here, we'll talk a little bit about the future now that we've mentioned the past, is that he just is not a big favor, doesn't favor too much what's going on, say, at Morganton Road, where they're clear-cutting trees. And
yes.
And obviously we're a growing destination now, and there's some modernization going on along that corridor. How does that make you, having been here since 1973, as we look to really, especially after this U.S. Open, is going to be a pretty significant growth pattern in this area from 2024 through the next U.S. Open in 29 into 2030. What is that? What are the challenges there? The rewards are more people coming to the destination. What are the challenges in terms of, you know, how that growth is going to impact this area?
Yeah. Well, you know, this is a majestic place. The pine tree that we have here, unlike many places throughout the Southeast and all over the United States, the longleaf pine is the most majestic of all. It's the longest branched needles. It has the largest cone. The types of soils it prefers are highly well-drained, and they are very desirable timber. They were very desirable for turpentine and other things prior to timbering. But I think the notion that we can have growth in the forest and the refurbishment of that, a great example of that is the Sandhills Community College campus. There's a campus nestled, tucked in politely, very friendly, with all the trees that were not that size when the campus was built, not even close. And so I think that the relationship of bringing a forest back, although I don't like to see it just cut for no purpose, but you have to start with my perspective of this. This was a clear-cut, overcut, barren place when it began. So what we celebrate today is not what they started with.
Right. Kind of ironic.
Even on the golf courses, you know, a lot of the stands of trees, if you look at what Donald Ross dealt with when he was laying out all of the courses, whether they be pine needles or southern pines or Pinehurst type courses, snags, almost no trees. And today you couldn't imagine those courses without those what I call corridors of trees.
And the reason why people come here and visit.
Yeah, exactly.
It's interesting, when you drive down from Raleigh, it seems like the pine trees get bigger and bigger, yeah, and taller as you get, yeah, further south. And back then, when you're talking about with Ross, I mean, they were sand greens.
That's correct. There was no grass, no irrigation, you know, so, but what I've found in the old photographs that, you know, at the Tufts Archives or the Given Library is that the foreboding, barren, infertile look that the place had to be visionaries to hang around. I mean, folks had to believe in this could be different and better, and it got better and better with time. So,
and you mentioned golf, and as we record this, and when this becomes available to the public, will be right around the opening of Pinehurst number 10. So you've worked closely with Bob Farron, the keeper of the greens. So talk about your relationship with him, not just with number 10, but over the years and when it comes to golf at Pinehurst.
Well, you know, you asked me the other day when we had lunch, do I play golf? And I told you I did not. And you kind of looked at me like, well, what are you doing here? And I said, well, I'm not an athlete. I don't like to be humiliated, especially by an object. And I don't have a lot of time. And so that's why I don't play golf. So it takes me back to your question about Bob Farron. Bob is one of the highest professional, you know, golf course superintendents in the country. And his and my relationship is, I don't ever deal in any way, shape, or form with a golf course. He calls me outside the ropes. So when I deal with a resort at Pinehurst or at Pine Needles with Kelly Miller and his group, we're always dealing with the landscape that has nothing to do with golf. And that's not because I don't appreciate the game or anything like that. It's just, I think my expertise in that level would not even measure up for worth the conversation. I'm more of a, you need clubhouse sited, you need parking lots, you need signage, you need civil engineering. We're ready to go, but we just don't go inside the ropes.
So building Pinehurst number 10, I mean, so when it opens, it's just going to be the golf course.
Yes.
But in terms of like the lodge style clubhouse, some of the other amenities that will be built out there, you'll have more of a hand.
Could have a role in that, yeah. The clubhouse, where the clubhouse, but even maintenance, where's the maintenance shed? You know, what color is it supposed to be? How do we make it not obvious? Like if you go to number 8 and, you know, we were instrumental in that building where the clubhouse is, the views you got from there, working with the golf course architect, mm-hmm, of course, right? And then, of course, you don't even know there's a maintenance building out there when you go. So that kind of thing.
You had served at San Jose Community College. You mentioned that. And we promote, from a tourism standpoint, the Horticultural Center.
Yes.
And talk about that. I mean, I think a lot of people don't understand, and we try to impress upon people that you really need to go. I mean, there's a lot there going on.
Yes.
And every 12 months out of the year, there's always something growing there. Yeah. Talk about the impact it had on you and what contributions you might have made there.
I came there as a faculty member in 73, and it was a regionally, if not nationally, renowned landscape school. We had students from all over the United States and also four-year degree students coming to get a two-year degree in landscape. So my role at the campus was, I became, under Raymond Stone's leadership that was president at the time, all these campus, any new building, I was involved in that. And I was also the principal contributor to the gardens that you know today, mm-hmm, from a design standpoint. And those gardens are horticultural, like you say, probably best kept secret in Moore County many times. It's well done. It's done in a way that presents what can grow here and what you could pay attention to, a good attraction.
If there was one place, I mean, that obviously is a place you would recommend. Is there like a hidden gem from a landscape architecture perspective you would encourage locals and especially visitors to check out when they're here?
There are several. The Weymouth Center, formerly known as the Boyd House, is a classic piece of architecture and, you know, surroundings, whether you're into the detail of gardening or not, just the notion of how you feel when you're there is, mm-hmm, great. Weymouth Woods, which is going to take you back to some of the stories that was not overcut. I mean, that apparently is what I'd call preserve.
Hike it all the time.
Yeah. So you realize you're in a very, very different place when you're in that forest than you anywhere else in the county. You just mentioned the gardens. I think those three would rank as far as just other than nice towns and good communities. If you just wanted to take a hike or a walk, I'd go with Weymouth Woods, the Boyd House, I call it, and Sand Hills Community College Gardens.
When I look at your background here, and it's amazing, to have energy is an understatement. The amount of boards, the amount of jobs you've had, responsibilities. You have, what, 7 businesses now?
I'm a co-owner of seven businesses.
Where do you find the energy? And I think even just reading your background, you've even been, I guess, challenged by business owners, like, hey, how do we do this? You know, and so where do you find that energy and where do you find that knowledge to be able to have the enthusiasm to be that helpful?
Well, I wake up every morning, Phil, with the notion that if I could help Phil do what he needs to do today, I've had a great day. So my passion for others, I may get a little emotional. That's where my energy comes from. I like growing young people. I like helping towns write ordinances, whatever they think I'm capable of contributing to, as opposed to authoring fully and that kind of thing. Just gets. I'm a dyslexic, so I learn differently than other people. So my passion is about trying to contribute to the objective of the day. And so it doesn't take much stimulus if that's all it takes to drive you to jump on board and say, if I can help, I'm here.
I know in just our conversation, and this is maybe a shameless plug, but I mean, you know, Nature Select does my landscaping at my house, and they do a fabulous job. I'm not just saying that because you own the company. I didn't understand. I didn't even know when we were talking that you were the owner and founder of that company. Talk about what makes that different versus, I'm not going to name other companies that you might hear of nationally, but what you believe in from a horticultural perspective.
Well, it has two differentiators. You know, all business needs to differentiate itself to find value, and, you know, uniqueness is an overused word, but Nature Select has two things that we believe you as the customer want and are very completed when you get them. One is you have a personal relationship with the person working for you, and they have that with you. So we are more people-centric than product-centric. And in this particular company, we believe the wave of the future will be more of a natural systems approach to lawn care rather than the synthetics, fertilizers, and so forth. So I bought that company 12 years ago and have test marketed in three other metros in North Carolina. And it is proven that we can feed the soil that then feeds the plant, as opposed to just treating the soil as though it's inert and doesn't have life. Soil, the soil life is what that company's about.
And as we wrap this up, I mean, we could go on. I mean, you're, again, a fascinating individual, and we appreciate all the contributions you make to the Pioneer Stair and this destination to make an even better place to live, work, and play. The old Spectrum building in downtown Southern Pines. We get questions about that because, like, what's this fence doing around this building? Yeah. And I know I'd spoken to Adam Kiker, one of the LKC engineering associates there. That's going to be your new location.
Yes, it is.
Talk about that a little bit, because, I mean, people, like you said, we get questions about, hey, what is going on over there? And I said, that's going to be the new headquarters for LKC engineering. So how is that project going? Right. And when do you expect that to be unveiled?
Great question. I'm like a proud father, so I'd be glad to share that with you. So the merger between the Hyder firm and LKC took place 10 years ago in January. We were about 13 folks at that time, and now we're about 65. Wow. And in 10 years. So we've outgrown the spaces we're in. We're committed to the community. We want our employees to be able to walk the streets and have lunch and, you know, gather after work at, you know, Southern Pines Brewery or the Growler or whatever. So we've bought that property. It's under demolition now. We've got all our site plan approvals. The contractor's hired. And so within 18 months or so, we think we'll move our 60 so folks over here. And by that time, we might have a few more to bring. And so we're very excited about two things: being invested in the community, because that's part of our purpose, is to really be part of something rather than just a user of something. And then we believe that because of being in a more active space, that it'll help us attract employees.
Sure.
And you know, have a better life for them, even if it's a midday walk downtown.
Well, we certainly look forward to welcoming you to downtown Southern Pines. Yeah. We just need more parking spaces. Can you work on that a little bit?
I'll work on that.
I know you're into the landscape architecture, but a nice, nicely landscaped parking lot would be really good. But I know Reagan Parsons and the folks here in downtown Southern Pines are working on that as well.
I would promote a parking deck.
Okay, there you go. And I've seen some nicely landscaped ones too.
Yeah, we did the one at First Health. I don't know.
Okay, yeah. Awesome. Well, yeah. Robert, it's been a pleasure having you here. Yeah. Great conversation, and continued success in everything you do. We look forward to some of the work you do around town and the U.S. Open coming up in just a couple of months. Robert Heider, senior advisor with LKC Engineering and renowned landscape architect, the modern day Frederick Law Olmsted. How about that?
Wow.
Well, that's been it for Paradise in the Pines. If you want to learn more about tourism, go to our website, homeofgolf.com. It's going to be a brand new website in March, so you want to check that out. For our videos, go to our YouTube channel, which is Home of American Golf. And if you love this podcast, just search Paradise in the Pines, download it, share it with your friends, and rip off the knob. For Robert Heider, I'm Phil Wurz. I've done that two podcasts in a row now. I got to get that straight. This has been Paradise in the Pines. We'll see you next time.
I didn't get to ask my, I was going to ask you a question.
That's right. You were going to interview me.
It never timed itself, and I wasn't watching the watch. I was going to ask you, okay, Phil, this is Paradise in the Pines, and I know your background. Could you help me define paradise?